sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets closing in on the lows. Feuding in the Koreas. We'll be chart watching today and talking about some stocks to watch. All this and much more on episode number 426 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hey there, Andrew Horowitz, and it is the end of the Kerplunk week. It seems that investors finally got the idea that, hey, you know what? We're going to sell. And it wasn't on light volume. We saw some pretty good volume pick up into the markets at the end of the week. And it ended up in a pretty disastrous situation with stocks being sold off with abandon. Now, you hear things like, well, it was a real orderly sell-off. It was an orderly decline. It was no panic. That's not what I saw. I saw that there was some significant panic if you look at the underlying conditions of individual stocks, not just the index. Now, sometimes when they talk about this, just to give you an insight into the vernacular, into the way that the media talks about things, particularly when you talk about some of the inner workings of markets, when they talk about a panic sell, oftentimes you'll see these panic drops, these very significant and severe movements intraday that take out various support levels. And when you see just a decline that is continual, selling that doesn't abate throughout the day, sometimes I'll talk about that as an orderly sell-off. Now, you can look at it both ways from a market standpoint, when there's hundreds of stocks that are being combined into one index, and you see that there is a constant sell going on, and it is slow and quote-unquote orderly, and it progresses down lower throughout the day, that you can say it wasn't really a panic sell. But I'll tell you something, when you look much more closely at the time periods, let's say 10 minutes, you'll notice that every single time the market tried to move higher, it was smacked down pretty hard. And if you look at the underlying stocks, you could see anywhere from 5 to 10% losses on the day for Friday. Big names that have quality earnings, good outlook, strong fundamentals, didn't matter. They were sold pretty hard. It was very disorderly when it came to individual names, as well as when it comes to certain sectors. A lot of sectors hit pretty hard. Big question is, what is going on? Is it over? Now, for those of you out there that are buy and hold, kind of fall in love with the stock, you know, something we've talked about not doing, something we talked about letting the technicals, letting the fundamentals, for the most part, take over. Try not to get too emotional. At least have a system, have a process that you have. One of the things that I think we've tried to really hit home here on this podcast is that if you don't have a process, if you don't have a system, if you don't have anything that you follow, you can really get hurt pretty badly. One of the things that we do in one of our strategies, we have several different strategies, you know that already. For those of you that are new, we'll talk a little bit more about the Arrow strategy, which is our technical algorithmic strategy. I'm going to get into some details today about how that actually works, what happened last week, some of the things over the last 12 months, some things that you need to know, give you a better idea. But one of the things we talked about was in one of our strategies, the TDIMG growth strategy, Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, one of the core components is individual equities. We use a quantitative screen. So there's one of our disciplines. We use a quantitative screen that we've identified as looking for stocks that have the best potential outward look because they have continuing earnings that are growing at a certain pace, revenues that are growing, margins that are expanding, return on equity that has certain levels, all these things, many, many things that go into this. And we start out with a list of 5,000 different stocks. Now, this is called a quantitative process. where you're looking for a filtering or screening process to get a list of stocks that you could start working with. Now, this is our core positioning. We call this the fundamental core of what we do. And one of the big issues here is we look at how many actual stocks come through that screen. Historically, we could see that maybe 60 or 70 stocks on average come through that screen. I've seen as high as maybe 80 or 90. I've seen as low as maybe 30 or so. That was interesting when we tracked that back and we looked at the history of this. We found that when there are many stocks that make it through these tough criteria, that we noticed that markets generally are doing well. The big picture, markets are doing well because economies are doing well, because companies can really do what they can to expand their overall earnings and earnings. Things are good. Markets are on a trend probably that will be moving higher. And when we find that there is all these stocks, we look at that as a good thing. So let's put a green light there. Now, on the other hand, where we see that there is a significant reduction in stocks, we see that maybe we had, let's say, 70 stocks that came through the screen, and now there's maybe next month 60, and the month after that there's 50, and maybe then all of a sudden there's 40. Something is not right. Now, I'm not talking about quickly moving from 65 or 70 stocks down to 60, and then after earnings season comes out, maybe you have 70 again. I'm talking about when you see a progression lower. What is that telling us? Well, when we look back historically, we can see that when that happens, markets are not as happy. Put a yellow light there. Something's not right. Companies are no longer able to meet these high levels of earnings growth. No longer are they able to have margins expanding. Okay, well, that's something you got to think about. Now, when we look back on that kind of situation, what we found was that when you saw a declining number of stocks that make it through our screen, again, this is our process. You could develop your own, but this is something that we do. When you look at that and when you see that there is a reduction in the amount of stocks, we notice that markets aren't as happy. Things are not as good. Exactly opposite of when we have all the stocks that are in there. That we talked about a moment ago, where you know you have 70 stocks or 80 stocks, or at least you're growing the base of stocks that make it through the screen. So now, I think I told you a few weeks ago, last month sometime, that only 45 stocks came through that screen recently, and that was a warning. I told you on this show, and I told you on DH Unplugged, and I told you a few times, if I'm not mistaken, hey, something isn't right. Now, I can't put my finger on it if it's a quick situation that all of a sudden, because of maybe the dollar is rising, and companies are really having some headwinds due to that. If there's a little bit of a global slowdown that's causing an intermediate situation, that's a problem. If the Fed, you know, is raising rates and there's some problems there. The fact is that we have 45 stocks, and that now brings us into a red light situation versus the green light that we talked about before. Something is just not kosher. And what we do is we reduce down the overall exposure of individual equities in our portfolio. And that provides us some overall risk management, because now we have far fewer stocks and lower exposure overall. Now, that's just an example of what's going on in terms of how you create a system and make sure that you have a certain amount of equity exposure in your portfolios based on some type of process. Sometimes you want to look at, when you're buying something for core holdings, you want to look at, okay, well, how much of my portfolio should be in equities? These are the kinds of things that you need to look at, and when, in fact, you reduce that down. If you're just simply saying, well, I like this stock. I like this stock. Well, I like that stock too. You know, I'm going to start buying them, and you hold them just because you like them. And then all of a sudden, you get spooked out. This is where the problems come on. Right? The fact is, when you get spooked out, when all of a sudden you start selling at the wrong time, wait a minute. That's the old buy high and sell low. You don't want to do that. So you want to make sure you have a system of discipline, some kind of a process that you can actually work with in order to make sure that you have the portfolio exposure set so that it doesn't destroy you when things go bad. Now, in terms of the markets, You know, what's going on? What's happening there? Well, we see that underneath the core markets, underneath the S&P 500 large cap, underneath the Dow, which has been definitely selling off more, only 30 stocks there, so much fewer stocks to really to hide what's happening. But the large cap big names in the S&P 500 had been doing pretty well for a while. And in fact, if you look at this as a capitalization-based or capital-based or size-weighted index, what's happened is that the larger companies had more weighting. And what that did was it really masked a lot of the goings-on underneath the index. So while the index was kind of hanging in there and nothing major, 1% here, 2% there, 1% up, down, underneath there, there was some serious damage. There was some statistic I was listening to, I think it was this week, that something like, you know, 40% of the S&P 500 stocks are in a correction. 40%, you know, we're talking about 10 to 20%. Another like 15% were in bear market territory. Now, a lot of those were oil related, maybe some of the gold miners, things like that. I mean, some of the commodity related stocks obviously got hit pretty bad. But when you look at technology, biotech, healthcare, you look at consumer discretionary, a lot of these big names really were holding up this index and really warping the overall process. Now let's talk about, well, we got to fix this. Well, you got to fix this. Why? You got to fix this because now all of a sudden that these major names are having a reaction that is negative and is pulling down the index, people are all pissed off. So now what we got to do is find a way that we're going to change it. You know, just like we did with GDP last quarter. Remember that? GDP came out and we were really upset that the first quarter was negative again. And now we're going to go back a number of years because the first quarter is always negative due to seasonality and some other really crazy calculation and statistical anomaly. And now what we're going to do? Well, we're going to change it. Kind of like the Jerry Lewis movie, right? It's don't raise the bridge, lower the water. So anyway, the markets were masking what was really going on underneath. But again, just for a moment, going back to what I was talking about a moment ago, we could see this a little clearly versus just looking at maybe a technical trend of the markets, maybe just looking at levels, because we saw this through our process that said that, hey, wait a minute, you know what? Something is not right and we're not getting as many stocks as we should. Now, you could have done this a lot of different ways, maybe looking at fundamental trends, just looking at the overall amount of earnings that were expected to be. Could have looked at this with the whole idea of, as we've talked about many times, that companies were meeting their earnings expectations or beating them due to the fact they were doing all these share buybacks. You could do this as you saw that markets were unable to make new highs, and combining with that, with the volume, and maybe, who knows, you could have used a lot of different things. So if you're sitting here today, and you're like, man, I just got obliterated by 8%, 9% last week or the week after, or you're down 10% on your portfolio entirely last week. You know what? Who's to blame? You need to ask yourself, what did I do wrong here? Constantly in the world of investing, you need to ask yourself, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing right? And should I have done something differently? How can I do it? It's not a function of being upset with yourself, being discouraged. It's a learning process, educational process, in order to give you what you need to be successful. Now let's take a moment to look at, you know, what's going on in the markets. You know, what is it that is really ailing the markets right now? There's no particular order, but we're talking about a market that nothing, this is not insignificant, a $2 trillion sell-off in the last week, and really pretty much in 2 days. S&P was down 5.5% last week. Dow Jones is in correction territory, down 10%. S&P 500 is getting close, down about 7.5% from its high or so, 8%. And the Russell small caps holding pretty well Friday. We'll talk about that in a moment. But actually, we're down 10% right at that correction level. But you got things like Greece. We thought Greece was done. 2 years ago, we thought Greece was done. 6 months ago, we thought Greece was done. 1 month ago, 1 week ago, every day we thought Greece was done. And now all of a sudden, the prime minister is saying, hey, you know what? I'm resigning. I'm going to call a snap election. They do this crazy, crazy election thing where they can resign and basically be reelected, right? So I'm going to resign and we're going to see if I can get reelected. If I get reelected, well then, The fact is that my competition is not out there and I have a great following. And what that somehow says is that they have much more power, authority, and following and the support of their countrymen more so than before. Because if they can be reelected again with all this controversy that's going on, don't forget, this is the guy who said, hey, we're not taking the crap from the euro. We're not going into austerity. We are sick and tired of the fact that we have all this debt on our backs. We are not paying back the bills. We are going back to our society, possibly pulling out of the euro, going back to the drachma, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, when push came to shove, they couldn't take it anymore because their banks were shut down, the stock market shut down. Looks like they were going to go out of business overall, right? Had to sell off a lot of their assets. The sovereign assets had to be sold. Caved in, got about $95 billion worth of loans based on a variety of criteria, which is crapola, we know. And then came back the week after that, needed another $6 billion, by the way, on top of everything. And now he's resigning. After he did a flip-flop on the whole deal, he's resigning. Not a good time to do this whole thing and create more uncertainty, because if he resigns, who comes in? At least we know what kind of nuthead we have in there now. Then we get China. You know, for a long time, I've been saying that it was very difficult to trust any of the data from China, but we have no choice. The data, that was it. The data was what was provided, and therefore, what else are you going to do? You got to trust it. At least, let me back that back. Let me rewind that for a second. You have to pay attention to it, and you have to look at it in the minds of how other people will be looking at this. You don't have to trust it. As a matter of fact, let me double strike that. You do not have to trust their data. The fact is that even if you wanted to trust the data, the fact is that how would you do so? They have a very antiquated way of putting together all the information. Plus, the country is enormous, almost impossible, as well as there's a tremendous amount of individual governments that put in the data, and much of that data is slanted in their favor in order to make their own pockets more profitable. They're trying to stop a lot of that right now, a lot of that underground type of economic statistics that are developed from each of the various cities. But as we talked about, I was just there and talked about all this building that's going on with nobody living in it. Fact is that their currency was artificially high. That really hurt their exports for years. And as their GDP was slowing, no longer could they stand by and say, hey, you know what? We're going to try to get this domestic economy growing here at the risk of our GDP falling dramatically. And on top of that, when you look at the amount of foreign reserves they held, a devaluation actually helped them. They have all this foreign reserves. So what do? They drop the yuan by 2%. And all of a sudden, their foreign currency that they own is worth a lot more. They can repatriate those assets or, you know, bring them back, sell them, and make a nice little tidy profit for the use of propping up the economy, propping up their stock markets, etc. Nice little trick. And on top of that, the good news is they own a tremendous amount of U.S. bonds. So they only not only own a lot of foreign reserves, they own a lot of foreign assets. And as they own all these foreign assets, those actually are moving higher too. Now, that's a very temporary situation because they really screwed up the whole currency markets. See, the euro is moving up a lot higher. Dollar started moving down. You see that other countries are starting to devalue. Vietnam had to devalue their dong last week. I think it was Kazakhstan that devalued their currency, dropped like 25%, causing major ripples and more like a tidal wave in a very, very tense environment to begin with, and one that when you do it with currencies that are on the brink anyway due to the fact of all of the central bank manipulation that has been done over the last several years. Not by our central bank only. I'm talking about central banks around the world. Everybody caught the excitement. Every central bank caught the excitement of, wow, look what we can do to possibly prop up our economy. Not looking at the potential for what's the fallout long term, especially if economies don't perform, where do you have to go? How much more can you cut? We never got that inflation that we were concerned about, but you know what? What did we get? We got created a tremendous amount of volatility potential, and really putting things on the brink due to the fact that central banks have such a tremendous amount of debt overhang now that they brought into their stable. Now, China is slowing down. We see the numbers that came out last week, their manufacturing gauge in corrective territory and contraction, 47.5. We see that their GDP definitely is a question. We see that all the gauges of real estate and everything is falling. They have to do something. The stock market, which they artificially propped up by buying, has been faltering. The retail investors are not just leaving. They are absolutely screaming, freaking out, and running away as fast as possible, even with the government coming in and trying to step in on a regular basis to prop it up. We see that the Shanghai index dropped another, 10% last week. We're at that 3,500 level on that index, which is supposedly the level that the government will step in. I think we're only 5 or 6 points away. With that and with this currency devaluation, with the slowdown in China, one of the largest economies in the world, you got to take notice of that because many of the companies that we have here in the United States get a tremendous amount of revenue overall from China. Now, throw into that that we are seeing knock-on effects, that there is a real concern, and a true demand issue, because China was a major buyer of commodities over the years. Now we're seeing that oil clipped $40 this week, at the end of the week. We see that copper is falling. We see that all the industrial metals are having a real problem. This is because there is this major slowdown in one of the largest economies in the world. Again, back to China. Now, continuing on, what else is ailing the markets? We see that earnings are have not come in as great as we expected. And we all know that underlying a lot of it is the fact that there is a tremendous amount of financial engineering going on in the form of dividends and share buybacks, stock splits, things of that really don't do much for the true nature of fundamentals for stocks. But yet, at the same time, we all bought into this for some time and saw that the companies were able to beat their earnings estimates no matter how low they were or how high they were, because they were able to do a lot of work to make sure they beat that estimate. Outlook has not been that good. We saw that Walmart came out last week with a real concerning outlook for their next quarter or two, saying that, number one, wages really hit them. They had that minimum wage increase across many of their stores, if not all their stores. And that hit them. Plus, clearly the simple demand's not there. Even with the lower cost of commodities and the pricing that should be happening, lack of inflation, they're just not making the money that they thought they'd make. We have the Fed seemingly very stuck on the fact that they're going to raise rates at least nominally, some ridiculous level, just to say, hey, we can actually raise rates. Just want to let you know, we're serious. We think that the situation with the employment and inflation is getting close, and we're seeing that we're getting towards full employment from what we see should be full employment, 5.3%. We're seeing that the initial claims, 277, the longest the best numbers that we've seen in years in terms of initial claims, and things are really pretty good in that area, and housing is healing. We're seeing that the NAHB, which was the home builders sentiment index, pretty good. New home sales, existing home sales, building permits, hey, pretty good. So the areas that we're really concerned about, which really the Fed, what's the Fed concerned about? Employment, banks, and real estate. Well, all those things are kind of healing, doing really well. And maybe we shouldn't hold a zero interest rate policy any longer. So what are they going to do? How much are they going to move? It's going to be a token move. It's not going to be anything that's going to be like, oh my, you know, we went from 0 to 2.5, which is ridiculous, to 0.35 or 0.5. I mean, that's still kind of emergency levels. That's not levels that are consistent with a solid economy. But the fact is, I think they want to test it. They could always go back, I guess. Right now, there's nowhere for them to go. Where can they go? We're going to go from 0 to 0.25. We're going to do a rate cut. We're going to go from 0 to 0.25 to 0 to 0.15. Is that really a rate cut? And this whole range thing is ridiculous anyway. They can't really go negative. That's not going to happen. Can you imagine if they went negative? Woof. Boy, there'd be some buying going on there. I don't know about you, but if we had negative rates, how fast would you be going out to borrow money? I don't know if banks would lend at those levels, okay? But the spreads would tighten, clearly, for banks and be problematic. They need to raise rates in order to really get people off of their keister and doing things. As an example, bad example, by the way, but just an example, when Japan telegraphed that they were going to increase their taxes for, you know, retail taxes and consumption taxes, if you will, sales tax, there was a massive amount of buying in the months right before that increase. Massive amount of GDP growth, tremendous amount of opportunity that people saw that, hey, you know what? If I wait, what's going to happen? If I wait, wait a minute, why would I wait? If I wait, I'm going to have to pay 7% more or 5% more, whatever the number was. I'm going to buy it now. Things are on sale now. They're never going to be again. Why should I wait? If there was no sales tax increase, people could wait. If there's no change in the interest rate and people are not worried about interest rates going higher, why should they go out and get a mortgage? Why should they go out and maybe borrow money for, I don't know, expansion of their home or maybe expansion of their business or maybe something else? This is creating an environment where people are just not really excited to rush out and do something because they are worried that things are going to get more pricey in the future. The very nature of inflation is that people are buying things because they think prices are going to be higher in the future. The very nature of deflation is that people are not doing anything because they're very satisfied right now. They think that, hey, if I can wait, prices may be down in the future. Why do we not have any inflation? Because the Fed is stuck on these rates. I just don't understand why they don't get this. I don't understand. Now, obviously, you could push rates too far and you can clamp down an economy and people just say, you know, things are too expensive. I can't do this. But I'm talking about setting the stage so psychologically people are, hey, you know what? I better start doing something. I better get off the fence of buying that car because right now I can get a really good rate. But you know what? If it wait a little while, we're probably at the lows right here and going higher. What the Fed has done has convinced people that they're never going to raise rates. And if they allow for this whole market situation, the slowdown in China, and the slight slowdown in earnings to get in their way, I think they'll be really foolish. In fact, I think if you really break it down, what's going on right now is that the reaction in markets, the reaction and what has happened with rates, although rates have come down again, but in the reaction of what we've seen in people, what they're doing in terms of the guidance and the dollar and currencies is because the expectation is very high and building in advance that there's going to be this rate hike. For them not to do this rate hike would do a lot of damage for not only their credibility, by the way, but it would do a lot of damage to the, or I would say, confusion. You know, markets hate confusion. People can't stand confusion. At least I may be wrong, but I know what I'm thinking. Confusion, you can't make a move. They need to do this in September. I do not think, by the way, it would be very harmful for markets or for bonds or for the or for the economy or for currencies at this point. I almost think that if they finally do it already, it'd be a kind of a buy the rumor, sell the news concept. And maybe that's what's happening with the dollar right now. Aside from the currency devaluation in a variety of countries and in China, you did see that the euro is starting to move up and the dollar is moving down. Possibly the dollar overshot expectations of where the Fed would move. And right now it's starting to come back a little bit. I would bet you that if, in fact, we saw a slight token move by the Fed with the commentary that this is going to be something that they will watch and adjust accordingly, allow it to sink in for a while, things will be just fine. If I was to have you close your eyes for a moment and think about an environment where the interest rates were 0.5%, well, let me go further. Interest rates at 1%, okay, Fed funds rate at 1%, unemployment at 5.3, GDP at 2.5%. The ISM service index at 58. Home builders selling more homes than in recent history. Car sales doing pretty well. Corporate profits pretty stable. Nothing too bad or good. Just stable. Would you think that 1% was too high? Or would you say, wow, 1%, still a low rate. Still pretty low, still kind of looking to stimulate the economy with a low interest rate environment. I think so. So 0.5? Well, same situation, 0.5? Yep, still stimulative. Now, there are probably two other things that I can identify that are causing some problems in markets. One of them being the technicals. So I had put some charts up previously that showed the various support levels and put them out as something that you need to kind of pay attention to. You remember that? Well, I redid those. They're going to be on thedisciplinedinvestor.com for you to take a look at. Follow along with me, actually, because I want to share something with you. Go take a look at the chart that shows the various support levels on this episode of thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll wait until you click over to there because I want you to follow along some of the things we're talking about. All right, you got the chart? All right, so let's take a look at this. The first thing I want you to look at is this is the S&P 500 that I put on here back a number of months back to April. So it goes back a little bit further from support levels. I want to show you some of this. Now, I simplified this chart. Chart goes from where is it? Where we are today back to about April. But I simplified this and took off a lot of the background that I used to create some of these levels just so you could see it and then drew the lines in just to make it easy. Some of the support levels weren't important. And we looked at the daily, the weekly, etc. Right now, by the way, we're on the weekly support for the S&P 500. Okay? It's an important thing that you look at the longer-term support levels. Then you bring it back to the shorter term, maybe the dailies, 240-minute, 60 minutes. Start with the longer-term trend. That's always very important. Now, clearly, you can notice just by looking at this chart that the trend, just the simple trend concept of where this is moving, it has been broken. Okay? Now, any way you want to draw your lines, connecting a couple of lows, we broke through support. We broke through support pretty significantly, as a matter of fact, over the last couple of days. Dropped from about 2,100 this week down to about 1,970 on the S&P 500. Now, we happen to be at pretty good support levels from what I'm looking at. Now, the support is about 1,972. We overshot that a little bit. But you'll notice if you look at this, I circled a couple different areas. This is the red area that we're looking at. We're hitting the support that we saw that had good volume support back from December of 2015 and July of 2014. Now, that's a long time ago, July 2014, over a year ago. But on a daily chart, we're hitting that support. Weekly, we're still in the weekly support level that we've seen for 2015. Now, if you look at the number that we're showing you here in the red, the circles, they do coincide very nicely with that. So that's probably why we were a magnet to these levels. Why we got to this particular level right here, right now, was because the first level of support was broken, that 2040, that was the consolidation range. If you look at the top right of the chart and you look at the range from 2015 through August, you'll see that pretty much we tapped that 2040, came above it, came down, came above it, just ever so slightly, but stayed within that range and could not break out of it. That consolidation range for 2015, really, that was very much accentuated from April through August. Now, there was no reason to think that when that 2040 came up, that it wouldn't hold again. So a lot of players were out there placing their bets at that line. But once we started to crack that level and come below the lows that we hit back in March, that's when the selling persisted and started to really heat up. And where do we go? Well, you do see, if you look at, let's call it December through February of February 2015, there's a lot of movement that took out the 2040, came down to about 1980, 2000, moved back up, down, you know, kind of a lot of jiggling around there, indecision of what's happening. Then we finally got above that 2040 and held it very nicely. But yet, that's where we are right now. This is just a volume-based support discussion. And just to clarify that, I'm not looking at just the pricing and how long the price has been there or just a simple level. We want to find out where the players are placing their bets, where they're actually buying and selling, where they're actually supporting a particular level or they're selling. And you can see that through volume. You can see that through the amount of shares traded, the amounts of dollars traded. And what we look at when we look at this is a volume-based study. Now, again, you don't see the background information, the calculations that went into this on this chart, because I wanted to make it so it was simplified so you could take a look at this. But the point is that that is one of the best ways that you can actually find where the trend is. Not the 50-day moving average, yes, important, but still not important enough. 200-day moving average, important, but still, that's just a time-based level. It just says, okay, where's the price at what time? You know, 200-day moving average, that's the time period. What's the price? Multiply it out, calculate it, and that's what the number is. It doesn't necessarily tell us anything more about truly where people are willing to put their money up. When we do a volume-based calculation and we throw that into the mix, that's how we find out where people are actually willing to bet their actual money. Okay? So you don't ever see this, by the way, on any commentators don't talk about this. You don't see this on TV. They talk about the various moving averages, the slope of the moving average. It just is an easier thing to talk about, and it's frankly not as high-end. I'm giving you what major money managers, what major players will look at truly beyond just simply price and trend. Now, when we look at the blue box, the support back to August of 2014, okay, take a look at that. You'll notice that there is one point really that we can find that was substantial enough to give us a level of support where markets can go to next. Now, I hate to say this, but it's 1907. Now, there may be some small areas that the market can hold, but if you take a look at something, take a look at the last time the markets broke down through these levels. Let's take a look at July through August of 2014, when we had that support that I mentioned before, but then it broke. It came right back down to this level. Let's look at the October levels. When it broke down, it came down to 1860 or so. Now, are we going there? I don't think we're going straight there. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about some of the reasons for that in a moment, because I have some other indicators that I want to share with you and what they're actually saying right now where we are. But the fact of the matter is that beyond this level where we are today, with a little bit of wiggle room, okay, there really is not a lot of support from here down another 5%. About 5%, 4%, 5%. Next is the support finally at the March of consolidation rates of March of 2014 through May of 2014. Now, we went back. You can't see all of it. This is the orange box on the chart. Talking about, give or take, about the 1848 level. That's pretty substantial. That's a long way from where we are now, okay? That would be some real problems. If you look at what kinds of things happened with a 5% loss on the S&P 500 this week and how many stocks were hammered dramatically, I mean, that would be pretty substantial and severe correction territory and really do some very serious damage to many stocks. And what we're finding is, again, that the underlying situation with markets right now had been that we've been in distribution mode. I've talked about this, right? You've heard me say this, distribution mode. We are seeing that there was, every time a lot of, some buying would come in, it would come in with some selling. Clearly, the sellers were much more in control. That doesn't have to last forever, by the way, and that's not necessarily predictive, but it's just another piece of the puzzle that there clearly has been a lot of selling going on in the recent market condition. So just to recap all this long discussion about what's going on in the markets, okay, we have Greece, China, oil, commodities. We have earnings growth questioned, currency devaluation, central banks doing their job to manipulate, but also create a lot of support, but yet they just can't keep up with what they have to do. Technical indicators showing some really concerning levels of support and breakdown of support levels. And finally, an overall distribution that's going on in the markets. Now, we saw at the end of the week with this sell-off, the VIX. Do you look at this? The VIX, which I think at the beginning of the week was like 12.5, 13, finished the week at 28. of 118%, one of the highest levels that we've seen in a very, very long time. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, people are getting concerned. I guess as we stuck through the range, we held that level of 2040, nobody was concerned. It goes down to 2040, bounces back up, I'll buy in, I'll buy the dip, you know, who cares? Something changed. Something all of a sudden said, hey, you know what, maybe we should buy some protection on our portfolios. And here's an idea for you. Take a moment, listen now to this. The VIX doesn't stay elevated very often for too long. Now, yes, if markets break down further, you could see the VIX go higher, but it doesn't necessarily mean if we see a 0.5% move lower that the VIX necessarily will move higher. Because what happens is, I'll give you an example. Let's say the markets broke down 1% and stayed there for a while, just kind of hung in there for a while. What would happen with the VIX? Probably the VIX would come in a little bit because people get, okay, you know what? It fell down, it moved down quickly. It's the velocity of the move that really spooks people, creates fear, and has people buying protection for their portfolios. But what happens is that over time, the VIX starts to come back a little bit. It's only when we have consistent and consecutive selling cycles that go on where you see the VIX really stay elevated for a very long time or move higher to, you know, 30 and 40. So maybe with the fact that we still have a very accommodative Fed, we still have central banks around the world doing what they can to prop up markets, financial assets, etc. And the truth is that, you know, we hit some support here. Maybe it's time to start looking at possibly dipping into shorting the VIX. Now, we started shorting the VIX on Friday, very unsuccessfully, on this one position. But I do think that there is something to say that you can go very quickly back the other way. We've seen it many, many times. And if, in fact, this time it doesn't work, okay, it may be the failing time. But fact is that we have seen time and time again that the VIX has come in with a very accommodative Fed very, very quickly. So from 28 down to, let's say, back down to 20. I'm not even talking about back down to 15. I'm talking about 20. That's a pretty good move, right? I'm talking about, you know, $8, like 30%, 28%. So the potential to short the VIX, there's a couple different ways to do it. You could do it directly through options, although you'll see how that works out. That's not the easiest thing to do. You could buy puts, or maybe even, I'm not really thrilled about this either, but SVXY, S-V-X-Y is the symbol. You could buy that. That's short the short-term VIX. Won't have as much of a reaction as the VIX does, but it is something that you can take a look at, possibly buying to consider shorting the VIX. Don't get freaked out if you start legging into a trade here and all of a sudden it goes against you. I do think that longer term, you'll be very well paid off there. But, you know, do your homework on it just as a piece of the portfolio. It's technically going to push you towards the long side of investing because you're going to be looking at a settling down of volatility. That's what you get with the VIX. You get the volatility, right? That's the kind of fear index for volatility. It's not a perfect vehicle by any means. It's not something to be held for a very long time. But take a look at that as something that you may be interested in doing if you're thinking that maybe some of the selling pressure is going to abate. All right, let's go back to what's going on with the markets, talking about some signals that I'm seeing, some things that are happening right now. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1,000 points for the week in correction territory. The S&P 500 down 5.5%. Big question is whether the sell-off's done or not. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, one of the things you want to have is diversification in your portfolio. I want to talk to you a little bit about the arrow strategy that we have, something I've talked about many times, and a lot of you have written in about it and are investing in it. But for those of you that don't know about it and not invested in it and maybe want some more information, this is an algorithmic strategy, a technical strategy that we created to trade the S&P 500 either long, short, or neutral. So we're looking for overbought and oversold, not your traditional. We call it that. It's not your traditional overbought and oversold, but areas that are significantly overdone and look like a turn can happen either on the upside or downside and also the trend. So we could be in long, we could be out neutral, and we could be also short the S&P 500 or SH, or depending on what the condition is, we may use either or. Now, we use probably about 15 different indicators that calculate a very complex and I would say almost a continually correcting process that will look for where these levels are. Now, we're not looking to catch, let's say, a one-day move, although it could, that is, you know, and then swap back. It's not an intraday process. It's, again, a more of a trend situation when a variety of things come together to show us that something is either a positioning for a long or short. Now, things are going pretty well for it this year. Let me give you an example of just the last week, for example. So last week, starting last Monday, a week ago, the signal was for a short. It was a few days before it went short, and it came into the week short. Now, we flipped to a neutral, interestingly enough, on Tuesday, but it flipped back. The signal came back to go to a short positioning on Wednesday. Now, we haven't seen too much of this year. In fact, from January through about, I think it was April or May, January through May. No, I think it was January through April. The arrow was long the S&P 500 through SPY, through an ETF. Then there was a quick change, went back to long, another quick change, went back to long. So it's not like all of a sudden, you know, you have to worry about, we usually don't have to worry about this thing changing every other day. Sometimes it does, but generally speaking, you know, you may have in a year upwards of 15 trades a year, 20 trades, sometimes only 4. I think the most trades we've ever had was like 35 trades in a year. So it did flip to neutral on Tuesday. It went back to short on Wednesday. And what was interesting, it signaled a bottom on Friday. Now, usually they don't give this all away to you because we keep it for our clients, but I wanted to share this with you because I thought it was kind of interesting how this all played out last week. So again, we came in short, went neutral on Tuesday, went short again on Wednesday, and actually closed the short positioning on Friday and opened up a long position. Now, how did that work out? So the S&P 500 was down 5.6% for the week. The arrow is actually up 1.35%. So that's a pretty wide margin, right? These are gross numbers, not including dividends and things like that. This is just, you know, the numbers of looking at the closing positions, opening, buying, and things like that. By the way, for more details, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. On the right-hand side, you'll see Arrow Strategy. Click on that. We'll send you a performance update and some other things that you can see about Arrow and about the strategy, risks, and everything related to it. But this is something that helps us diversify our portfolios. It's a standalone. We also use it inside of our TDIMG Managed Growth Strategy. It is a great diversifier because not only do I want to have individual core holdings in my portfolio, but I want to have a technical algorithm-based strategy that has, quote-unquote, nothing more than just technicals going into it. So I want to have a strategy, for example, that has fundamentally based. I want to have quantitative, and I want to have technical. Combine it all together and have a portfolio that is based on this. All right, how's it doing this year? Well, this year, it seems that the S&P 500 is down about 3.85%. Arrow's up just over 1%. On a one-year basis, so this is back August 21st through August 21st, 2014 to 2015. So the S&P is down 0.65% over that period, approximately. Arrow's up 6.5% for that period. Now, Arrow doesn't always necessarily do opposite markets, right? It could be a situation where Arrow is long when the markets are moving higher. It could be Arrow is long when the markets are moving lower. It all depends on the current structure of the trend, the strength of the trend, and where we are from an overbought, oversold basis based on all of these indicators that we have and all these calculations that we do that, again, are self-adjusting inside of the strategy. Now, this is kind of interesting, I thought, how right now we're still in a downtrend, by the way, but Arrow found that we were significantly oversold. Matter of fact, we got a cluster that it formed on our strategy of oversold indicators. I thought that was really interesting. And it went long. Now, that coincides with some other things. Let me kind of get these. I wrote all these down. Let's see here. Okay. Yep. So we have multiple oversold signals on other indicators that we watch as well. I thought that was kind of interesting. The big question is the sell-off done? It's only been 2 days. I mean, really, that's not really true. The sell-off really began back a number of months ago. Started back in May, really. If you look at a chart for the S&P 500, for the Dow Jones, for the small caps, U.S.-based stocks, not talking about foreign stocks for a moment, really started back in May. Now, many of our strategies that we look at in terms of these indicators that we built, a lot of them are available, by the way, on TradeStation. Aero Strategy is directly invested with us, by the way, $50,000 minimum. We'll give you more information on how to become a client, and I encourage you to do so. Aero is something that can help you diversify your portfolio, I believe. But we're seeing multiple oversold signals. Let me give you an example. The key reversal indicator. This is something that we utilize as a broad-based measure of markets to see, okay, how is sentiment, what's happening with regard to the overall reversal potential. We want to find areas that we can see very, very significant levels, again, of oversold, overbought, different than Arrow. And I like to use different indicators with different methodologies to see if they all confirm. Does that make sense? Try to use different things to see if they point to the same place. It's kind of like asking somebody for a referral and they all give you the same doctor. Well, maybe that's the doctor you want to go to. So that's what's happening here. I want to use multiple indicators to give me confirmation of what's going on. So the key reversal indicator, KRI we call it, is a -4, and we have what's called a cluster on that as well, meaning that there has been successive levels and trends that are causing us to get what I call a cluster, and oftentimes that's a reversal point. Now, again, it may not happen in one day, but usually what we've seen in the latest trend over the last year or two with the key reversal indicator, when we get to these levels, I've seen fives, -5s, I've seen -6s, by the way. Those are, you know, when you see a -6 on the KRI, you're like, oh, man, all hands on deck, get out your wallet, start spending money on stocks. -4 is not the worst I've ever seen, but it is a level with a cluster that is something that you have to perk your head up and say, wait a second, are we in oversold territory, at least for an interim pop? Okay, I'm talking about trading here today. Really, I'm talking about shorter term timeframes. We also have our key algorithms, our aileron, that is now deeply oversold on an enormous amount of stocks and markets. We see the weekly S&P is at support, as I mentioned earlier. The Spearman, not confirming. The Spearman is not confirming absolute bottom here, but it still is in very significantly oversold area. And we've seen huge volume. Now, the huge volume on Friday is suspect because we had quadruple witching. And that would usually lend to a tremendous amount of selling and buying that pushes up volume because of the quadruple witching process. So all of those, I'm not calling a bottom. That's not what I do. But I'm just telling you that we are getting to a point of not freaking out here. And unless another shoe drops that we are unaware of entirely, just think about maybe looking at this as some opportunities that are coming, that could be coming your way shortly. Finally, I just want to talk about some stocks that I see that have been getting to a point that they're starting to say, well, that's interesting. Small cap stocks are interesting. Only went down a little over 1% on Friday when the markets, S&P was down 3.25% for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. They're only down a little over 1%. Interesting. They made their correction territory pop back up. And actually, when I look at the aileron indicator that we look at, it's starting to get a little bit firmer and better. Interesting. Apple is on the daily and weekly support. Aileron is still a little bit negative. Here's one I thought was interesting. FXI. Hang Seng ETF. Long-term support on the daily. Going back a bit. Aileron is starting to turn up. Look at FXI. And if you want to be very brave, YINN. Y-I-N-N. A 3-time. You also have the government in there. So, oh well. If you want to look at the FireEye, which is a security-based, tremendously overselled, long-term support is being reached. And this looks like a level that, while it is a bit of a falling knife, which is the same thing with all situations with all stocks in the markets right now, well, take a look. I want to mention gold, GLD, GDX. Looks good, but we are starting to see significant amount of resistance forming in the GLD. And if there is any good news that starts to happen, I do wonder if the selling ensues again in that. And finally, oil stocks. I looked at a tremendous amount of oil and oil-related stocks, and I can't find anything to buy. I mean, we could be at a point of a bottom here, but oil looks terrible. Stocks look terrible. Dividends are possibly going to be cut. I mean, things are not looking good. So that's a good list. I'll put that list of names of those stocks on the show notes for this episode. I'll also put the charts that we talked about for the S&P 500 support, as well as information on Aero, et cetera, there for you. It's going to be interesting now that we have a commentary out of China over the weekend that they're going to potentially be reducing down the reserve ratios for banks, the RRR as they call it, and they've also made a crazy announcement that there's going to be the availability and acceptance of state government pension plans buying stocks. Up to 30% of the portfolio, which used to be just treasuries, are now going to be allowed to be include stocks. This is a response to the Shanghai hitting 3,500, the all-out panic that's going on with a slowdown in China. So we'll see how that lifts moods over the weekend and into the trading day on Monday and throughout the week. We're going to end it there. Thank you for joining me. Of course, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out the things that we talked about on this episode, as well as follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. Andrew Horowitz is the Twitter handle that you can follow, and be sure to comment and read along. And I'll see you next week, and also on DH Unplugged, which will release Tuesday night about 10:30, 11 in the evening. Again, thanks for joining me. I'll see you soon.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.